Hello, I'm Jonathan Overend and welcome to this latest episode in Series 2 of Sport and the Feels. It's Paralympic feels running throughout the postponed Tokyo 2020 Games. And today it's a wheelchair basketball special, a brilliant sport to watch and compete in, but one with a real live issue at the moment on that thorny Paralympic subject of classification. Right, well, joining me again for this episode, it's Andy Stevenson. How are you, Andy?
Hello, Jonathan. Yes, very well, thank you.
I remember you saying to me in Rio, you've got to come and watch wheelchair basketball. And you took me into this brilliant arena. You took me right up to the back of the main stand and we sat there in an absolute packed house watching the bronze medal match. I absolutely loved it. It was my first taste of wheelchair basketball. But there's no doubt that this is a really high-octane, exciting sport to watch and compete in.
Absolutely. It's one of my favourites, I have to say. And you're right, I covered a lot of the wheelchair basketball for Five Live in Rio. And I was actually sat there in the basketball arena some nights and I was flicking through social media and the news and things. And it was pretty clear that some of the sports were struggling crowd-wise. The athletics in particular were struggling to get people through the door because it was out on a limb in the centre of Rio. And I was sat there in the Carioca Arena in the Olympic Paralympic Park with a full house, as you say, and they were making an absolute racket. And the beauty of basketball, of course, is you have all the razzmatazz, the music between points anyway, the halftime entertainment. So the whole thing felt like a complete different world to some of the other sports I was looking at. And the sport itself is just so quick, so skillful, and so close to its non-disabled brother of basketball that actually you can just sit and watch a match and take it all in and not really have to worry about lots of external factors as you sometimes do in some of the other Paralympic sports.
Yeah, it was right in the middle of the Olympic / Paralympic Park as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The velodrome was down at one end, the swimming pool was right up at the other end, but you could walk along this huge walkway that connected the two, and on one side was the tennis and then on the other side was this huge indoor arena, as you say, and the crowds were flocking in and out depending on the match, and it had a really international feel, didn't it? And the British women's team came so close, Andy, didn't they, to getting a medal, because this is a story very much on the move and a team on the rise.
Yeah, it was agonising for the women because they got to that bronze medal match and sadly lost to the Netherlands, so finished fourth. Nobody wants to finish fourth at a Paralympics or Olympics, but as you say, they're on the up because they've built on that fourth to win the silver medal at the World Championships a couple of years ago. The men are world and European champions. The men won a bronze medal in Rio. So collectively, as British wheelchair basketball, both teams were really, really aiming for a gold medal in Tokyo, no question.
Well, let's hope they still are. And if they get there, one of the key members of the British women's team will be Sophie Carrigill. And she's joining us on the pod. Right. Hi, Sophie. How are you? How are things?
Hi. Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Yeah, the things are weird, different. But yeah, just getting through.
Well, it should be in Tokyo, of course. That's the worst thing. And
oh,
you're
absolutely
not. You're in the rain in the UK somewhere.
I know. It's a bit of a shame. I keep looking at my calendar thinking, oh, I was meant to be flying today. Oh, I was meant to be doing this today. And yeah, it's a bit sad. But, a year's extra preparation won't go amiss. It'll be good for us. So looking forward to getting back to training soon as well.
I bet you've got the gold medal match circled in on your calendar somewhere as well, haven't you? That'll be coming up in a few days.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I have. That was definitely what we were aiming for. I've not got a Paralympic medal yet and it's the one that's missing. So yeah, in my career, it's definitely my goal. So yeah, it would have been a good tournament, good game. So hopefully still goes ahead next year and we get another chance.
Andy, it's so tough, isn't it? Because, we talk about the delay almost flippantly from our angle. Oh, well, that's kind of life. And yes, it is. And, we understand the reasons why. But from an athlete's point of view, all these guys, you know, meticulously back time their training, don't they, for major championships. So this is tough for Sophie and everyone on the wheelchair basketball team and everyone on Paralympics GB.
Yeah, and certainly in a team sport like Sophie's in, I guess lockdown really, really stopped you from being able to train properly. Have you had a basketball hoop up anywhere, at least somewhere, maybe your garage, your garden, Sophie?
Yeah, I've definitely used my driveway as my basketball court. It's not quite the same, but you've got to improvise, haven't you? Make the best of the situation. And as soon, you know, everything sold out pretty much straight away. I couldn't get my hands on a net. So I've been going once it was allowed, you know, to outdoor courts and things like that. I just can't wait to get back on court with the whole team. That's why I love playing basketball, is to actually play the sport and, you know, to play with a group of people and have fun, that kind of thing. That's what I enjoy. It's been, I've definitely missed it and really looking forward to getting back.
And you mentioned that the gold medal is very much on your mind, and rightly so, because I was in Rio, actually. I saw your bronze medal match, which you sadly lost to the Netherlands, but still a fourth place finish in Rio was very impressive. And then you've followed up actually since with a silver at the Worlds.
Yeah.
And so you are right there in the top, what, 3, 4, 5 teams in the world heading into Tokyo?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. As you say, Rio for us, fourth place finish was probably about right for where we were at the time. It's that bittersweet feeling, though, of being that only team that gets to the final four and then doesn't take home a medal. So, yeah, frustrating, but definitely kept us going and hungry for more. And as you say now, second in the world, just behind the Netherlands. I would put us as the top two teams in the world. But like you say, there's so many teams out there that a Paralympics is just a completely different ball game for us. People bring their A games and more. So you just don't know what happens, you know, people thriving under pressure or people failing under pressure. All those have a massive influence when it comes to a big tournament. We're up there and that medal is definitely the thing that I think about and what drives me.
Just going back to the challenges of lockdown for a minute. I mean, when would the last time have been before lockdown that you all got together as a team for a proper practice session?
I think it was about, it's middle of March. I think we had our last training session on something like the 15th or 16th of March. So it just, you know, it's like 5 months now. Oh. It's been nice, actually. I think when you're with people normally 24/7 pretty much, you know, breaks are really important. Obviously not to this extent, we wouldn't wish this, but, you know, having a bit of time away to work on things that you want to work on individually is actually it's important and it's valuable time. So I think we've sort of tried to see this as a positive and make the most out of the situation and try really unpick some of the things that we want to be and what we want to do as a team. So, yeah, we've used the time to our advantage, I think.
For me, Sophie, the wheelchair basketball is the most exciting sport at the Paralympics. And I think... Ooh, somebody at the door.
Oh, no, sorry, it's my daughter. She's on a sleepover. Hang on, let me tell her to call back. Hi, Jessie, I'm going to have to call you back.
Oh.
I'm talking to a very good basketball player, so I can't talk to you. Are you okay? I'll call you in about 10 minutes.
She's coming home to have a sleep. She's been awake all night eating sweets and watching films.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's all right.
Yeah, exciting sport. It's brilliant.
The wheelchair basketball is the Paralympic sport that will pull in casual viewers, you know, who might not know much about the Paralympics. But if they flick on and see a wheelchair basketball match, it's just as exciting, actually, if not more so, in my mind at least, than able-bodied basketball. And you can just sit and watch, and you don't necessarily need to get into any really complicated classifications or anything like that. It's just a great, great watch.
Oh, yeah, 100% agree with you there. I think that's why we can get a lot of fans to come watch, because it's a, like you say, you don't have to complicate it. It is just a sport, and you don't have to understand the classification if you don't want to, because the only difference is we're using the equipment we're using is a chair instead of our legs. So really it's not, you know, people don't look at it and think it's complicated. And I think you're right, like it takes a minute maybe for people just to to see the sport and watch it and then realise how exciting, how thrilling, how competitive it is. So I think you're right. Obviously I'm biased because it's my sport, but I think by far it's one of the most exciting sports to watch in the world, never mind just, you know, Paralympic sport.
And what I love about this as well is, you know, so many of the Paralympic conversations go back to hearing about athletes' backstories and, you know, tell us how you ended up in a wheelchair and all that sort of thing. Mm. But your story with this team ahead of Tokyo is all about the sport, because you're building, you are heading one day to that gold medal, and it might be in 12 months' time, you know. Fourth in Rio, silver at the World Championships. This is a proper feel-good sport story. And do you feel that as well within the group, that you've got something very special building?
Absolutely, yeah. I think we're definitely on that path. We've built really since the London 2012 Games. That's when I first got involved with the sport at a GB level. And ever since then, we've just been getting better and better. We've had more funding, which has really allowed us to grow the sport, which then brings in more people. It brings in more people to play and watch. And yeah, you're right. I think sometimes with Paralympic sport, you can fall into the trap of talking too much about what has happened to you to get you to that point, you know, accidents or illnesses or whatever it is, like you say, the backstory. And they're all valid and really important.
Yeah, it is important, yeah.
But also I think we're on a sort of mission to focus on the sport completely, and it be about us winning and about our success on the court. Because you don't really want, you know, you want to get away from that thing of people thinking, oh, that's great that they can do that because they've been so ill or injured or whatever, or that sort of sympathy factor that sometimes happens, that I think, yeah, we're definitely trying to just see our sport as an elite sport, because you know what, we train just as hard, if not harder than any Olympic sport out there, so I feel like it should be respected in an equal way, around, you know, it just being sport, and we work really hard to get to where we are.
And one other interesting factor I always think about wheelchair basketball, Sophie, is that it's the participation gateway, if you like, to the Paralympics for so many people who have spinal injuries. You know, even going right back to Ludwig Guttmann and the founding of the Paralympics, wheelchair basketball was key. So you must come across and meet and hear about so many people who are having spinal injuries day in, day out, and using wheelchair basketball as a key part of their rehab.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I get a lot of messages either on Instagram or Twitter or whatever from, you know, people who have just started the sport, and it absolutely is the gateway. It was for me. That's how I really started it, just to sort of build up my strength or get back into sport, you know, as rehab, as recovering. But I think the beauty of it is there's so many different disabilities that can play. And, you know, we're really proud of the fact that wheelchair basketball is so inclusive. In this country, you know, you can play if you're able-bodied and you can play if you've got minimal disabilities, which is so important for the growth of the game, you know, to allow as many people to play as possible, I think is obviously really important. And yeah, it's why we are such an inclusive sport.
You didn't fancy wheelchair rugby?
No, I did try that, to be honest, but you actually have to have three limbs impaired to be able to play that. So it's a bit, you have three limbs impaired, and for me, I'm just paralysed from my waist down and my arms are fully functioning. So it was basketball for me, but I'd played a lot of netball in you know, growing up, and it seemed like the right sport to sort of choose whilst I was sort of recovering still from my accident.
It's interesting you talk about the inclusivity of wheelchair basketball, because there has been a review, hasn't there? And those with more minimal conditions, shall we say, have been reassessed, and in some cases have been told they can't compete anymore. It's very much a live issue in your sport. What do you think about that?
It is, yeah. It's on everyone's mind at the moment. I'm in the position. My view is that I think anyone should have the right to play sport. And if you can't play the able-bodied version of the sport, you should be able to play the disabled version or the accessible version or whatever, inclusive version, whatever it is. And I just think it's wrong that they're trying to push, that, you know, there has to be some sort of classification in place. I 100% agree with that. But people who are genuinely registered disabled, you know, have an impairment, whether it's minimal or not, it means that they can't run and can't go play the able-bodied game of basketball. I just think it's a real shame to be doing that when the Paralympic movement has such a... their values are so much around inclusion and equality, that it's just a real shame. And I know there's a lot of fights going on behind the scenes. I mean, thankfully for me, it hasn't affected me personally, but I 100% stand by the athletes that are going through it and trying to fight their case, because it's, it would be a real shame to lose some athletes who are a great athletes, you know.
Yeah. Because you want to be able to refer everybody to what you said about a minute ago. What a great inclusive sport this is. You know, it's something for everybody, yeah. No matter what your impairment is. But the reality is, at the moment, knowing what you know is happening in basketball, you can't really say that, can you?
No.
That's interesting you said about the registered disabled thing, because is that not... And I mean, Andy, maybe you come in with your thoughts on this. Is that not just the simple way of eliminating all these grey areas? And this is not a discussion exclusive to basketball. We should point that out. You know, a lot of sports have this issue. But if you're registered disabled, surely you should be able to compete at the Paralympic Games, full stop. Or am I getting that wrong?
Yes, I'm just trying to think, though. I mean, yes, that does sound... logical, I know, but I think if everybody who was registered disabled, you know, I'm registered disabled myself, and actually I know from my own, when I was younger and sat and thought about, oh, well, should I give a sport a go and try and get in the Paralympics? The sport I absolutely loved as a child was football, but there wasn't a kind of type of football in the Paralympics that I could have played. I'm not visually impaired. I don't have cerebral palsy. I am an amputee, but my specific conditions mean that I wouldn't be able to play amputee football as they do at international level, which is by hopping around using crutches. So I would have been left in a bit of a hole in terms of football. You know, I love playing golf, but golf isn't currently in the Paralympics, even though now it is back in the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
I think the classification system is absolutely required, and I don't think you can just give a green flag to anybody with a disability turning up and saying, I want to be in the Paralympics, because you still absolutely need to make sure it is elite level. I think it's the classic thing, isn't it, Sophie, is the Paralympics purely about participation? Actually, probably not.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. It's like, it's just the same as able-bodied sport. You know, everybody can play the sport if they choose to, but only the top, however many, 12 in our case, only the top 12 athletes get to then go to the Paralympics. So it is, the Paralympics for me is all about the elite sport, and that's the way that it needs to keep going, because it's, you're the best of the best. But I don't think that should ever stop people trying. You know, if they want to try succeed, and if they've got a minimal disability, they should be still given that opportunity, even if they don't end up getting selected because they're not as good as someone else who's their same classification. Or, you know, I think it's definitely a balance around... I just would hate people to not play sport because of this that's going on at the moment, and think, oh, well, what's the point if my disability's not going to be classified? I think sport's just such a massive... especially in disability, you know, for people to be active, to meet people like-minded. I think it would just be a real shame if people were disheartened and sort of discouraged from starting basketball because, or any sport, because of what's going on at the moment.
So what is going on at the moment? Well, for a number of years, the International Paralympic Committee has been asking the International Wheelchair Basketball Federation to review the way it classifies its athletes. That's to say, review the level of impairment, or indeed the impairment itself. Now, this is really important in Paralympic sport, so some sort of level playing field can be achieved. And in basketball, it really should be quite simple. Each player is given a number according to his or her level of impairment, and the team which takes the court has to have a balance of players with different numbers. So that's to achieve fairness across the team. Simple on paper, in practice, well. Because the IWBF believes anyone with a disability, however major or minor, should be able to play their sport, they've stuck to their principles. However, the IPC has been adamant that review is necessary, and it's come to a head this year. And without getting deep into the politics of it, it's meant some athletes who've been competing in the sport for years have now had their rating or classification changed. Some have basically been told they're no longer eligible to compete at the Paralympics. Some, like Britain's George Bates, just a few months out from the scheduled Tokyo Games, having won the world and European titles with the GB team, he's been caught in the middle of the wrangling, a governing body tug of war, if you like, and he can no longer play his sport at the Paralympic Games. And as you'll hear, he's more than frustrated. Extreme measures are being contemplated. Before we reach that point, though, George explains the rating system and how we are where we are.
Yeah, so every player is given a rating from 1 to 4.5, and it goes up in like half point increments. That's based on their disability. So someone with like a high spinal break is going to be a 1-pointer, and then up to me as a 4.5 with a minimal disability, and that can be my condition. It can be something called perfies, which is hip problems, and also below the knee amputees. And then on the court at any one time, it has to add up to 14, and that's where basketball gets its kind of fairness in the classification, because every team's playing to the same amount of points. So it's not just 4 high pointers that are really mobile and able against another team that only has low pointers. So it balances it out on the floor.
And I'm right in saying not all of the players in a wheelchair basketball team are wheelchair users in their day-to-day life, are they?
No, they're not. There's a whole variety of disabilities, which is kind of why I find basketball as being the most inclusive sport. You mentioned about the classification system in other Paralympic sports. You're setting your category with people with a similar disability to you, whereas in basketball, all disabilities are playing, which I think for the Paralympics anyway is only like a good thing. You've got spinal breaks competing with and against amputees, and the chair's kind of the great equaliser. Everyone sat down.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what I was thinking in this whole discussion. You know, the disability, if you like, is the fact that everyone is using a wheelchair.
Yeah. No? Well, that's
should this not be an issue of mobility?
Yeah, so I think that's where the disputes happened between IWBF and the IPC, that if someone can't compete in an able-bodied sport, they should be able to play a wheelchair sport, a disability sport. And that's IWBF's philosophy, is on mobility. If you can't run, jump, turn, like walk properly and stuff like that, you should be able to play, which is why we're in this kind of sticky situation.
Right. So tell us about you then. I mean, can you do any of that? Can you walk unaided?
No, I walk with a crutch. I've done for 15 years. I can't really go on long distance walks. If I do, I'll take a day chair. Like if we go to a tournament, I'll pretty much take a chair, because the pain in my legs will get worse. So I don't want to affect my performance or anything. So I'll take a chair and use that. I mean, I've not walked properly since I was like 11 years old. So it's kind of tough to take, really.
So there's utterly no way you could compete in able-bodied sport.
No, not a chance.
And now you're being told you can't compete in disability sport.
Yeah, that's really hard to take. Like, there's a lot of people in my kind of boat. You go through a lot when you go for an injury or a disability, and it's normally this kind of sport or finding something that really helps drag you out of like a dark place. And for me, basketball was that. And yeah, I just can't really get my head around it, to be quite honest with you.
So you have complex regional pain syndrome, right?
I mean,
you said a minute ago it's a minimal condition, and I know why you said that in relation to people who have massive spinal injuries or don't have their legs, for example. But
absolutely.
Again, on a day-to-day basis, just paint the picture of how disruptive it is and how much pain you are in.
I'm in pain in my left leg from like just above my knee all the way down, and it's kind of like a kind of hot knife going up and down it pretty much all the time. I take medicine to sleep because I can't sleep because of the pain, and I kind of have to plan my day around how my legs kind of doing. I've learned over the years what I can and can't do and what will flare things up, and I kind of have to And I guess if I'm going to go somewhere, know how long I'm going to be out for, like the day before, not to push something, if I've got something in the following day. So it really is kind of like a planning process with my disability.
And is the pain constant? Are there times where it's worse and slightly better? Is it the kind of condition that's likely to get worse as you get older, or remain steady?
I can just wake up and just be in like a ridiculous amount of pain and have to stay in bed all day and just feeling sick and horrible. I'm actually kind of, in day-to-day life, I'd be better off being an amputee because I'd be able to do more with a prosthetic. So I'm even more restricted than a single-leg amputee is in day-to-day life.
I was going to ask you about
which
that.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah, because you're suggesting, and you can tell us now, how seriously are you thinking about the idea of having your leg amputated? And is that... can you sort of put a figure on it in terms of how much would you be doing that because of your wheelchair basketball situation, and how much would you be doing it because, as you say, it will help you in your ordinary life anyway?
Well, there's a risk with it that if you do have it amputated, the complex regional pain syndrome can get worse or spread. So I could potentially amputate my leg and it go somewhere else. If it went into my good leg, for example, and I'm an amputee, I'd be stuffed. So it isn't just as... like, there's a lot of kind of risk involved to it, which I'm not naive enough to just be like, I'll cut my leg off and I'll play in the Paralympics. I've got a lot of the other things to consider, and obviously the rest of my life and things like that. I don't really think I can put a figure on it, and I don't think I'll truly know what I'd do until I've exhausted all avenues of, be that appeals, legal action or whatever. I don't think I can truly know myself what I do, but it was an option, and I could have done it when I was younger and chose not to. But I didn't think this would be coming back up. So,
well, that's almost the really interesting thing here, because you have said that you did have the option as a teenager to have an amputation. You chose not to. In hindsight, now knowing what has happened to you in your sport, is there part of you that wishes you had?
Yeah, there's always going to be that kind of like, what if? Maybe I should have done it. But I think at the right time, I was going through enough, and with the risks involved with it, for my mental health as a child, I don't think it would have been good. So I think it was the right decision. But I never thought that my disability would be the wrong type of disability for basketball. So, yeah, there's a part of me that maybe wishes I did, but such as life, things kind of happen, so out of your control.
To play devil's advocate, I guess, and looking at across other sports, there has to be a line in the sand somewhere from the IPC in terms of which athletes are allowed to compete in which sports. I know in the world of Paralympic athletics, for example, there is some unease, shall I say, about some athletes whose conditions maybe come and go slightly, or perhaps, you know, an athlete could turn up at the track one day and their condition is good, perhaps because of the weather conditions on that day. If it's a cold day, their impairment flares up. If it's a warmer day, it's not so bad. And they're lining up at the start of the race against somebody whose condition is constant. And it sounds like George's, the way he describes it, is constant. So I think you have to sort of see all sides of the argument here. The thing I sympathise most with you, George, on is actually the timing of this, and the sense that goalposts have been moved, the rules have been changed. So what I'm interested in, George, is when you were first classified for wheelchair basketball, what is that process? But also, were there any signs at that point that you were, if you like, just getting in as a 4.5? Or at that point, was there no question at all about whether you were going to be able to play in the Paralympics?
So, yeah, I first got classified, I must have been about 15, 16. Once I was classified, I didn't really feel that there was going to be an issue going in the future. And like you said, that is probably the biggest issue for most athletes, is the fact that how can you just kind of put this in now? The whole integrity of qualification for the Paralympics has been compromised. I mean, if I'm a team that's just missed out in Europe, so maybe Poland, Turkey have qualified with an ineligible player, GB have qualified with an ineligible player, myself. So I'd be questioning that and how that's fair. I mean, medically, I've got all my documents and stuff that, I mean, I'm registered with a disability and, like, legally have a disability, so I never really thought that this would crop up.
And how did you find out that you were suddenly ineligible? Did you have to have a reassessment, or was it just a message passed down to you?
So it was, to be honest, it was a pretty much a nightmare from the start. So we had no idea that this was going on until January, the end of January, and then the Telegraph actually released a piece before it was even announced. They sort of broke it the day before, saying that wheelchair basketball is going to be kicked from the games if they don't comply to the IPC's rules, because they've kind of ignored them for the last 4 or 5 years. Because, I mean, the IWBF agree with their own philosophy, and that I respect, but how they've handled it, I think is pretty terrible, really. So I then read the criteria, and all 4s and 4.5 classifications had to be redone before Tokyo. And I was a little bit nervous because they say that pain doesn't count in their eyes as a disability. But after I'd been to doctors and I'd seen specialists, I have loss of passive range of movement, loss of muscle power, like muscle wastage and things. So that does fit into two categories. So I then wasn't too concerned. The day that we were supposed to find out, the British Wheelchair Basketball Federation were sent a list of all GBs, 4s and 4.5s with either a yes, no, or need more info to classify. And I just wasn't even on the list. They hadn't even sent like my whatever my case had finished. Right. So they chased that up, and it turns out that the IWBF had forgot to even review my case. So I then had to wait another month and a half to find out, and I then found out at the end of August.
So if Tokyo had been happening now, this year, it would appear as though you just wouldn't have had a chance to appeal, and you wouldn't be there.
No, no, because I'd have found out 2 or 3 weeks before we were even due to fly out. So,
wow.
It's pretty
intense. So you'd have trained, for 3 years and 11 months.
Yeah, basically.
For an Olympic Games, and then you wouldn't have been able to do it. So,
yeah, basically. Yeah. Okay. But the other issue is that, as you said about the doing it before the Paralympics, the same things happened in tennis, but tennis athletes are allowed to, who are deemed ineligible, are actually allowed to compete in Tokyo, and it only comes in afterwards. So it really is, I feel like, two organisations, federations, arguing with each other, and the athletes are just the collateral damage.
Well, I mean, to that extent, the IPC have said, and you did touch on this a moment ago, they have said that they've been on at the International Wheelchair Basketball Federation for a number of years to review the situation. So who is most to blame here? And is there a fix, in your opinion?
I think both of them are to kind of blame. I mean, I appreciate and respect the IWBF not wanting to implement these rules because they're very rigid, they're very black and white. It's not like you've been like running where it's directly a paraplegic competing against an amp where it just wouldn't be fair. This is all averaged out whilst you're playing. So I appreciate them for believing in their own philosophies of inclusion, but the way they've handled it and had discussions with the IPC has been terrible. They've had years to talk and try and discuss with the IPC to add these other disabilities in and these grey areas where people will slip through.
So a bit more sort of diplomacy along the way would have helped.
Yeah, just and
bit of give and take.
No athletes were consulted on this, so we had no idea this was going on behind closed doors up until January of this year. The IPC, I know, and I fully agree that there has to be a classification system. Like, there's no question of that whatsoever. But you can't blanket every sport like with the same brush. It doesn't work. Every sport's different. Every sport has certain attributes and things that are needed for it to be the sport, really.
There's a potential split here as well, isn't there, George, in that actually if the IPC went one way and the IWBF go another, you could actually still be eligible to play in European Championships, World Championships, club level, I assume, but just not the Paralympics.
Well, that's the grey area at the minute. At club level, I'm all right to still play. But with international, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to be in European Championships and World Championships because they affect the Paralympics. And essentially, I can't compete in the Euros and we qualify for Tokyo, but me not competing in Tokyo, I guess it's not fair. So I, from my understanding, is that my international career will be done, basically.
Wow.
Which is pretty tough to take.
And what will you do if that is the case?
If I'm honest with you, I have no idea. the only thing I've ever wanted to win and the only thing that dragged me out of a pit when I was a kid was a Paralympics, and it's the only thing I've ever wanted to win. And like you said, we've won the World Championships, European Championships back to back, and this was, if the Paralympics would have been this year, we could have won three on the trot of those three things. So I'm pretty devastated that, like, my one dream and the only thing I really, internationally, the only thing I had left to win, I'm not allowed to compete in for not being the right type of disabled. It's not, I just can't accept that. Like, it's not an injury. It's not my choice to retire. It's completely out of my control. And I just feel it's unfair. And it's not just me. There's other athletes that's affected. I feel like it's unfair on those athletes that have given up their life. Like, I was a reserve for Rio, just missed out, and then worked as hard as I could for 4 years to never feel like that again, and got myself in a position where I'm kind of not a key member of the team, but quite important to kind of the team, and would be playing and would play in important games. And it's just been taken away potentially a few weeks before it would have even started.
And when we do get to Tokyo, the Paralympic coverage will include, you know, daily references to inclusivity and diversity and opportunity for all those sort of, dare I say, cliches.
Yeah.
How will that make you feel if you're not there and you're hearing those sort of comments made?
I think it's just kind of like laughable. I get why they're trying to do it. And like you said, like, there has to be a process and stuff like that. But I have all my medical documents and to prove that I have a disability. I kind of think it's a bit of a joke, to be honest with you.
We wish you the best. Did you say you've got till November on
the
appeal?
Yeah, so it's been extended until end of November, so I've got quite a bit of time to...
All right, you've got good people, have you, working on
that? Yeah, a lot of people working on it.
You've got assembled a crack team.
No, I sit around these meetings just like everyone talking about me. It's quite, for the first time ever. Normally in team meetings, I'm normally sat there being quiet.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to me.
Right, well, that was really insightful, wasn't it? George Bates there. And before that, the views of Sophie Carrigill as well, who was very interesting. And Andy, so was your description of the dilemma, really. You know, the very important perspective on this issue. It is not as simple as just saying everyone with a disability can compete. Having listened to both athletes there, how would you summarise the situation we're in?
Well, this is the tussle, isn't it, in the Paralympics? The tussle between participation, encouraging disabled people to take up a sport, sometimes as part of rehab from a terrible illness or accident. And then on the other hand, wanting to keep the Paralympics as an elite sporting contest alongside the Olympic Games. And it's dreadful hearing George and what he's going through. Of course it is. But at the same time, you do have to factor in that to retain the elite level of a sport, to be in a Paralympic Games, there have to be some rules. There has to be the classification system to give this level playing field. I mean, George's situation to me seems very unfair. And I think, as we discussed in the interview, it is the timing of it. The fact that these players have gone through the qualification process with their teams, and then at the end of that qualification process, they're having their Paralympic dream taken away from them. I think, personally, they should at least be able to compete in Tokyo. And then let's see where we are after Tokyo.
Well, as we talk right at the start of September 2020, there doesn't seem any chance of that happening in the short term. This statement is from the International Paralympic Committee, and I'm just going to take a couple of minutes to read it to you in full. The IPC took action against the IWBF, a reminder that's the International Wheelchair Basketball Federation, in January 2020 for its continued non-compliance with the 2015 IPC Athlete Classification Code. This is a rule book that came into effect on the 1st of January 2017 and which all Paralympic sports needed to be compliant with by the 1st of January 2018. Following several years of discussions with the IWBF to ensure its compliance, we needed to act as they were making little to no progress. No sport is above the rules that have been determined by the IPC membership. All along this process, we've clearly stated to the IWBF that changes must be made in advance of the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic Games. This January, our disappointment with the IWBF's reluctance to comply with the IPC Athlete Classification Code reached breaking point. The IWBF's reluctance to comply with the rules is all the more frustrating when you consider that the 2015 IPC Athlete Classification Code was produced following years of consultation with the IPC's member organisations, including the IWBF. It was the IPC membership that approved this code at the 2015 IPC General Assembly by 76 votes in favour and just 5 against, with 3 abstentions. We are sympathetic to the fact that a small number of athletes have been found non-eligible to compete in Paralympic sport. However, the IPC Athlete Classification Code came into effect on the 1st of January 2017 at the start of the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic cycle. Therefore, had the IWBF applied the rules like it should have done, then the timing in relation to Tokyo would not have been such an issue. That is the statement from the International Paralympic Committee. So, in summary, Andy, they are standing firm. The IWBF have now complied. They have retested. And people like George Bates, in his words, are the collateral damage of this whole political issue.
This is a thing that's going to keep cropping up in the Paralympics across various sports. It's the tussle. It's the tussle between participation and being an elite level competition.
Annie, many thanks. You've done an excellent job there, I think, of putting both sides of a very tricky situation. And whatever your views or whichever side of the fence you come down on, we wish people like George Bates well, because there aren't many of them who've been told they can't compete. But he is definitely one of them. It is his life. And as he says, this is what he has dreamt about, the chance to go to a Paralympic Games, the chance to potentially win a Paralympic gold medal. And he feels he has had that chance ripped from him. Maybe there will be a solution. Let's hope so. We'll see you next time on Sport in the Fields.
Sport in the Fields is a 94/19 independent production.